Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring Smitten Kitchen. Tonight we'll start off with a recipe for the simplest mushroom pasta. Lately I've been trying to take as many stupid walks for my stupid mental health, a funny, wonderful TikTok trend from over the winter, as possible, because if the last 2 years have taught me anything, it's that the outside time is a very key ingredient in me being a warm, upbeat, charming person. The kind of person who never hits her snooze alarm 4 times and then wonders why she's always in a rush. Okay, fine. It's not an exorcism, but it does feel surprisingly close. More often than not, I end up swinging through the green market, which leads me to bringing home whatever looked good that day, most recently spicy arugula, pinto potatoes, fresh flowers, and a bag of fresh cremini mushrooms. A few days after that, almost without fail, I realize I have mushrooms to use, and I've landed on a wildly simple pasta preparation that in a rare moment of mealtime harmony, everyone eats willingly. Honestly, I should have led with this mic drop. This is a non-recipe recipe, as in, maybe you'll read and follow it once, but I hope you'll take it from there after that. The base idea is to cook a thinly sliced vegetable in butter, olive oil, and garlic until it's tender and well-seasoned with a concentration of flavor. I add a splash of wine or marsala for an extra layer, but it's not mandatory. We then expand it into a sauce that stretches over pasta and let them cook together for a minute until they're harmonious. From here, you can add a big spoonful of something luxe. My favorite is creme fraiche, but if not that, mascarpone or heavy cream would work. The result isn't a creamy pasta, but one that tastes cozy and enriched. I always think it needs a little green on top, and I get that from the chives on my terrace that come back every year despite the fact that they're utterly neglected by me. The pot lost most of one side during construction last year, but they're out there flowering this week like nothing happened. We should also be so inspirational, right? Here's the recipe for simplest mushroom pasta. Serves 4, takes 20 minutes, and the source is Smitten Kitchen. The recipe is shown here with a 1 pound cremini of mushrooms, the size bag I buy them in, but it's actually really nice with 1.5 pounds too, if you've got it. Use any kind of mushrooms that you like or a mix and just slice them thin and season them well. I'm using a shape called Fusilli Pugliese here. You need some kosher salt, 1 pound of dried pasta, any shape you like, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 tablespoons of salted or unsalted butter, 1 pound of fresh cremini mushrooms sliced thin, see note, 4 medium garlic cloves minced, freshly ground black pepper, a glug of dry marsala or white wine, this is optional, 1/3 cup of creme fraiche or mascarpone or heavy cream, a handful of chopped chives or parsley to finish, this is also optional, and grated Parmesan or Pecorino. Bring a large pot of very well salted water to a boil and cook the pasta in it until 1 to 2 minutes shy of the package suggestion. Reserve 1 cup of pasta cooking water before you drain the pot. Meanwhile, heat your largest saute pan over high heat, and once hot, add the olive oil and butter. And once the butter has melted, add the mushrooms in as close to an even layer as possible and don't move them for about 3 minutes until they're browned underneath. Sprinkle with garlic and a good amount of salt and pepper, seasoning is everything here, and give them a stir. Reduce the heat to a medium high and cook, stirring until the mushrooms are soft and tender and any liquid expelled has cooked off for about 5 minutes. Add the marsala and cook, stirring until it disappears. Taste the mushroom mixture. You will want it very well seasoned at this point. Add your drained pasta and half of the reserved pasta water and cook, stirring until the pasta absorbs most of the liquid, adding more of the reserved pasta water if necessary to keep it a little saucy, 1 to 2 minutes. Remove the pan from the heat and stir in the crème fraîche. If you're using heavy cream because it's thinner, I'd cook it into the pasta for 30 to 60 seconds on the stove. Adjust the seasoning if needed and finish with the chives and cheese and eat right away. Next, we've got a recipe for cauliflower salad with dates and pistachios. Yum! This is a clean-out-the-fridge salad, I call it. I spend possibly an unhealthy amount of time, scrolling TikTok and watching other people clean their apartments? I mean, yes, that too, but I was going to say debating whether one needs a recipe for something I like to make, such as a salad. Doesn't everyone just grab random things that need to be used up and assemble them with a dressing? Yet my other favorite thing on social media is when something appears in my feed that I didn't know I was craving and I spontaneously must stop what I'm doing and kick all of my existing cooking plans to the curb to make it. What if this was the one that provides this for you? Thus, here is a salad that I craved last week before hopping on a plane to Minneapolis. After lettuce has been so expensive, it felt timely to focus on one without leaves, until I saw the price of cauliflower. But the beauty of this kind of salad is that you needn't feel overly tethered to these specific ingredients. This is merely a template for what I consider an excellent warm vegetable salad. A sturdy vegetable roasted until nearly scorched at the edges, but still a little bite inside so it doesn't collapse into mush. Something salty and crunchy. Here I'm using chopped salted pistachios, but you could use another nut or sunflower seeds. Next, it needs something complex, like pickled or roasted onions. And here I'm using segments of scallions, because I have scallions more often in my fridge than I have almost anything else. A warm salad can handle an extra zippy dressing, as the heat mutes it, so I'm using a whole lemon in mine. But to harmonize, I've also added bits of chopped dried dates, but other dried fruit would work too. Together, this is perfect for me, and I hope it takes very few tweaks to be perfect for you too. Here's the actual recipe for this salad, cauliflower salad with dates and pistachios. It serves 2 to 4, and it takes 45 minutes, and the source is right here at Smitten Kitchen. You'll need 1 large head of cauliflower, about 2 pounds, olive oil, kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper, 1 bundle of scallions, about 8 dried dates, 1/2 cup of shelled salted pistachios, juice of 1 medium lemon. You're going to heat your oven to 450 degrees Fahrenheit and coat a large baking sheet well with olive oil, and then sprinkle the pan with kosher salt and black pepper. Quarter your cauliflower, cut out the core, and then tear the quarters into bite-sized chunks. Dice the core into smaller pieces and then place on a prepared baking sheet and toss to coat in the oil, salt, and pepper. Lop the greens off of half of your scallions and slice them thinly, setting them aside. Cut the remaining whole and half and white half of the scallions 1 to 2 inch segments. Clear a little space at the end of your cauliflower baking sheet and add the scallion segments to it, and then season the pan with additional salt and pepper. Roast for 10 minutes and then remove the tray from the oven. You can leave the oven on and use tongs to remove just the charred scallion segments, placing them in a large bowl. Turn the cauliflower pieces over for even browning and return it to the oven for another 5 to 10 minutes until the cauliflower is deeply browned in many spots. Don't fear the char, it will taste good, not burnt. Meanwhile, roughly chop the pistachios. Pit your dates if needed and roughly chop. Make a vinaigrette with 3 tablespoons of olive oil, the juice of 1 lemon, plus enough salt and pepper to season it very well. Whisk or blend if you're as obsessed with your electric frother as I am. We want a sharp lemon dressing here. It will get milder as it coats the warm ingredients, but if it's definitely too sharp for your taste, blend one additional tablespoon of olive oil. When the cauliflower is done, add to the bowl with the charred scallions along with the dates, the pistachios, and the reserved scallion greens. Toss with dressing to taste. I use almost all of it, and season further if needed. Salad is good right away, but it also keeps well at room temperature for a few hours. Leftovers are great warmed in the microwave for just 10 to 20 seconds, just to take the coldest chill off of it. Next, we've got a recipe for grilled nectarines with gorgonzola and hazelnuts. Listen, I don't make the rules. These things aren't rational. But at some point over our vacation in Scotland, a time when we mostly consumed fish and chips, more chips steak pie, also with chips, a detail that I'm sure is unrelated, I began intensely craving the combination of peaches and blue cheese, even though I can't think of a time when they've crossed paths in my kitchen. Once we got home, I beelined for Salad Freak by Jess Damouk. This is available at Amazon, Bookshop, and more indies. A cookbook that came out this spring because I had a hunch that she'd put the idea in my head. And sure enough, she had a combination of stone fruit and blue cheese waiting to fulfill my wayward vacation craving. If you're thinking you don't need a cookbook for salads, as I might have in the past, I'm here to tell you how wrong we are. We do, if not for exact measurements, then for inspiration. For more creative ways to throw together what's left in your fridge so that nothing goes to waste, and figure out what to eat when you're in the third heat wave, fourth, fifth, I don't know, heat waves are just a continuum now, aren't they, of the summer, and everything you thought you'd want to cook in August just no longer makes sense because it's too hot to cook. Damouk's book has us covered. There's a breakfast salad with yogurt, cucumbers, eggs, and toasted seeds. There are soba salads and shredded kale salads and tortellini salad dressings with miso mayo and horseradish goat cheese and a barbecue chicken cob beloved by Snoop Dogg. And every single thing is just a little bit unexpected and delivering the freshness that I need right now. As for the nectarines, I'm trying to locate this salad on the meal continuum, but I want it everywhere. It's a dessert salad, or maybe part of a cheese course, or maybe a brunch salad, or maybe just something to have with a very cold glass of white wine in the late afternoon and pretend that we're on vacation in the Riviera. The grilled nectarines take on a pie-like fragrance even before you put anything on top. But the crumbled blue cheese, honey, mint leaves, toasted hazelnuts, and flaky sea salt coordinate blissfully into something so incredible together that I nearly ate the plate. I hope you put it immediately on your agenda. Here's the recipe: grilled nectarines with gorgonzola and hazelnuts. Serves 2 to 3, takes 15 minutes, and the source is Salad Freak by Jess Damouk. This recipe is a vibe, not a prescription. Feel free to use peaches, plums, or another firm, ripe stone fruit here. I use Danish blue cheese instead of gorgonzola because that's what I had. Use feta perhaps if you don't like goat cheese, if you don't like goat cheese, you could even grill some halloumi alongside the nectarines. For this, you're going to need olive oil and 4 ripe, but not too ripe, freestone nectarines or peaches, 3 tablespoons of honey, 1/2 cup of fresh mint leaves, 1/2 cup of hazelnuts toasted, 1/2 cup of crumbled gorgonzola or another blue cheese, flaky salt, and then you're going to prepare the fruit. Heat a grill to medium-high heat. Cut the nectarines in half and remove the pits, and drizzle with a bit of oil and grill until charred and warmed through, about 3 minutes per side. I actually didn't flip mine, but it took more like 5 minutes to get them charred on my dinky grill. Next, you're going to assemble and serve. Transfer the nectarines to a serving platter, drizzle with honey, and sprinkle with the crumbled gorgonzola and mint leaves. Roughly chop the toasted hazelnuts and sprinkle them over the platter along with a bit of flaky salt, and then eat with a fork and knife. Serve with very cold wine or a spritzy lemonade, maybe some prosciutto and melon. If you want to tie it into a whole summer meal, I'd make these clams and serve with grilled bread. And there is a link at smittenkitchen.com. Next, we've got a recipe for deviled eggs. I will never find it again, but a few weeks ago, a TikTok went through my head in which a woman is invited to eat half a dozen eggs, and she says, "Oh no, that's too much. But what if I scoop them out, mash it with mayo, and stuff it back together? Thanks, I'll have the whole tray." I'm pretty sure this wasn't the intended effect, but I've been craving deviled eggs since. I know we often think of them as a holiday party food, so this might make little sense, but I absolutely love them in the summer, especially when it's too hot to cook anything real and I only want to eat like two cold salads and a handful of potato chips for dinner. Deviled eggs, basically egg salad with less goop. My food writing chops are legendary, I know. They're the perfect piece to round out the meal. I like to keep hard-boiled eggs in the fridge anyway, so it's just a matter of peeling, popping out the centers. This is why it's so fun. Mashing them up and spooning them back in. I do have a few rules, though. I refuse to use a star piping tip, although a sandwich bag with a corner snipped off is acceptable. I always use a recipe like this one. I know measuring mayo in teaspoonfuls sounds fussy, but what I always want is for my eggs to be exactly as perfect as they were the last time that they were perfect. And that's what formulas are for. Finally, while I prefer the centers of my deviled eggs uncluttered, no truffle salt, caviar, dill, or relish, I apply toppings with chaotic abandon and whatever I can dredge up from the fridge. Here, I thinly sliced a shallot and pickled one half and fry the other. I also used finely diced celery, chives, radishes, and cornichon, and diced and crisped up some dry chorizo. Hot smoked Spanish paprika, which is mild paprika and some cayenne or chipotle powder, also works, is my favorite on top. This recipe is for 8 eggs or 16 deviled halves and makes no suggestion of serving size. This is because the Smitten Kitchen is, as ever, a judgment-free zone. Here's the recipe, deviled eggs. Takes 15 minutes and the source is Smitten Kitchen. This is my favorite way to hard-boil eggs. You're going to need 8 large hard-boiled eggs, 3 tablespoons plus 1 teaspoon of mayonnaise, 2 teaspoons of smooth Dijon mustard, 1.5 teaspoons of white wine vinegar, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper, hot smoked paprika, and garnishes such as minced chives, pickles, celery, radishes, bacon bits, pickled or fried shallots. So first, you're going to peel your eggs. I usually do this under running cold water for ease. Have the eggs lengthwise and pop the centers into a bowl. Arrange empty egg halves on a platter and mash the yolks with a fork until no chunks remain. Add the mayo, Dijon, vinegar, salt, and pepper, and mash until they're as smooth as possible. Taste for seasoning and adjust if needed. Either dollop the filling back into the eggs with a spoon or a scoop, or scoop it into a sandwich bag and snip off the corner to pipe it in. Fill the eggs evenly and dust them with paprika and scatter with everything that you like on your deviled eggs, and know that nobody here will judge you if you forget to eat anything else for dinner tonight. Next, we got a recipe for confetti cookies, one of my faves. The rules of cookie math, whether you're not, you're having your underlings dictate them to you, are as follows. Cookies with butter is greater than cookies without butter. Cookies with vanilla bean is greater than cookies with vanilla extract. Larger cookies is greater than smaller cookies. And cookies with fewer words in the title is greater than cookies with more. See chocolate, butter, or Oreos. Cookies with rainbow sprinkles are greater than cookies with chocolate sprinkles and also all other things ever. So a while back, I shared a picture of a sprinkled covered leftover cookies from an Italian-American bakery. You know, the kind that seem to be permanently staged in every office, kitchen, everywhere, on Instagram, asking how people felt about them and received a yield of comments and fervor of opinion, usually reserved for political websites. Here, at least, we had some consensus. They are the best sprinkles, nostalgia, cookies, but mostly the worst, artificially flavored, butter substitutes, gummy sprinkles, usually stale. The resolution was clear. Make your own at home with real butter and even better vanilla. I thought this would be the simplest thing ever, but a few things happened on my way to Rainbow Sprinkle Sugar Cookie Nirvana, only some of which are likely to happen to you. A quick trip to the magical baking supply store on 22nd Street, you know, the one with an entire aisle of sprinkles, had a completely unsatisfying rainbow sprinkle mix in stock. No blues, no greens, and before I could question the rationality of my own impulse, I had 9 different single-color sprinkle packages in my basket and went home to make my own totally more satisfying rainbow sprinkle mix. I regret nothing. Stop saying that I have a sprinkle problem. The next problem was that I'd mistakenly assumed that the classic American sugar cookie, you know, butter, sugar, an egg, flour, vanilla, dropped from a spoon, baked until they're all soft-centered and crispy-edged, and your apartment smells like birthday cake, was one of those things where everyone had settled on the perfect recipe. Well, not quite. My first cookie spread into a butter-greased, but delicious, of course, puddle. My second were stiff and stale the next day. My third looked right, but quickly turned brittle and packaged-like. And finally, I turned where I should have begun my search because, really, who knows better than the genius bakers at King Arthur? And I added cream cheese to the dough, and this produced a tender-bellied, complex sugar cookie that I think we should all make as soon as possible. The end? No, I had one more problem. I'm lazy, impatient, and a slew of other lamentable qualities, such as not being sorry about this at all. I don't want to wait for butter to soften, and I don't want to use multiple bowls to make a dead simple sugar cookie. And so I made them with cold butter and in the single bowl of a food processor, and now you know that you can too. Which brings me to the final rule of cookies. Cookies that can make and eat as soon as the craving strikes are way greater than cookies that require patience, as if they don't understand the nature of cookies at all. Here's the recipe. Confetti cookies. Servings, 28 2.5-inch cookies. This recipe is barely adapted from King Arthur. Technique and language were tinkered with. If you're using a food processor, there is no need to soften the butter or cream cheese first. If you're using an electric hand or stand mixer, you want them softened before you mix the dough. If you're using vanilla bean, which I really love here, I find you can maximize the flavor you get out of it by rubbing the vanilla bean seeds right into your sugar, distributing it evenly, and giving it extra flavor-releasing abrasion. And then use the sugar as written below. You'll need 3 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda, 3/4 teaspoon of fine sea or table salt, 1 cup of unsalted butter, 1/4 cup of cream cheese, 1 1/4 cups of granulated sugar, 1 large egg, 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract or 1/2 of a vanilla bean split and scraped, 1/4 teaspoon of almond extract, this is optional, and 1 cup of rainbow sprinkles. You're going to heat your oven to 375 degrees and line 2 large baking sheets with parchment paper. To make in a food processor, you're going to place the flour, baking powder, baking soda, and salt in the work bowl and pulse a few times to blend. Add the butter and cream cheese in large chunks, plus the sugar, and blend until the mixture is powdery. Add the egg, vanilla, and almond extracts and run the machine until the dough balls together, and you'll probably need to scrape it down once or twice to get the mixture even. To make with an electric mixer, you're going to combine the flour, baking powder, baking soda, and salt in a bowl and whisk to blend. And then in a large bowl or the bowl of a stand mixer, beat the cream cheese, butter, and sugar until fluffy. Add egg and extracts and blend again, and then add the flour mixture and beat just until the flour disappears. In some cases, this dough will feel too soft for you to roll into balls in your hands, so I let it chill in the fridge for 20 minutes or so before using. So for both methods, you're going to scoop the balls of dough. I like a number 40 or 1.5 tablespoon scoop. The texture is less dynamic when it's made smaller, and I roll them briefly in the palm of your hands before dropping them in a bowl of rainbow sprinkles and gently rolling to coat them evenly. I find that the sprinkles adhere much better to tacky exterior of balls of dough that have been briefly warmed by your hands, so just trust me here. Then you're going to transfer the balls of sprinkle-coated dough to baking sheets at least 2 inches apart. Use the bottom of a drinking glass to press down on the cookies until they are about 1 1/4 to 1/2 inch tall. If you see any bare spots in your sprinkles that bother you, you can sprinkle a few more on top. Bake for 9 to 10 minutes until they look underbaked but slightly, lightly golden underneath. If they're not quite soft in the center, they will be fully crisped through the next day. And let's set on the baking sheet on a rack for a few minutes before transferring to cooling racks to cool the rest of the way. And repeat with the remaining cookie dough. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.